It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Charles Payne.
I'm Kat Timpf.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, November 4th, 2022. I'm Chris Foster. Election day just around the corner, President Biden says democracy is in danger.
Our polling and polling all across the spectrum shows that people blame the White House and this president directly for how they're doing economically, and they feel like they're struggling. So, yeah, I don't know that that was their best closing message.
We're speaking with Fox News Sunday host Shannon Bream.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. Political divisions rank high on voters' lists of concerns in many recent Fox News polls. And while candidates on both sides of the aisle highlight their differences during elections, other candidates take a different approach, a more moderate one.
I'm running as an independent so that I can build a coalition of Republicans, Democrats, and independents to replace Mike Lee and stand up to our broken politics.
And I'm Guy Benson. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
4 days to go. The midterm elections are almost here. President Biden says vote like democracy depends on it.
Now, extreme MAGA Republicans aim to question not only the legitimacy of past elections, but elections being held now.
South Carolina Senate Republican Lindsey Graham on Fox responding to that speech in D.C.
I thought it was pathetic. I thought it was divisive. Not one word about how I'm going to secure a broken border, how I'm going to lower gas prices as president, how I'm going to challenge rampant crime, how I'm going to make us energy independent. It was about half the country basically being a political terrorist.
He's hoping to be in the majority when the new Congress starts in January. Democrats are trying to hold on to the Senate. It's considered a long shot for them to hold the House.
Power rankings, polls, we have all this new stuff. It definitely seems like there's this incremental shift to the Republicans.
Shannon Bream's the host of Fox News Sunday.
You know, all summer, it's been a roller coaster. Democrats had the advantage on the congressional generic ballot. They had an advantage in a lot of these races as well. And they're so tight with so many things within the margin of error. I don't think anybody should be celebrating on either side of the aisle just yet.
Looking at a couple races here, Republican Blake Masters running for Senate in Arizona, maybe a little bit of a boost against incumbent Mark Kelly. The Libertarian in the race dropped out and endorsed Masters in a close race that, whatever, 2-4% could make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, he'll still be on the ballot, but the fact that he's out there actively saying, I toss my votes, I want my folks to go to Masters, is a big help. I think Carrie Lake in the gubernatorial race, everybody would have to agree, has been a big help for Masters as well. Our new polling out of Arizona shows that Republicans have the enthusiasm advantage there in these races. And so if they are fired up by Carrie Lake, I think that only benefits Blake Masters. He has definitely been trailing her versus how she's doing in her gubernatorial race and his senatorial race. So we'll see. I mean, Arizona is one of those states that, you know, they've had so much litigation over 2020, over how the votes went down, over people who want to be poll watchers and how that, what's appropriate, what's not. A lot of legal fighting and things going on. So I think we'll have a lot of eyeballs on Arizona come election night.
Looking at Pennsylvania, a lot of eyeballs there. The latest Fox News poll has Democrat John Fetterman up 47-43 against Mehmet Oz. That's among voters saying they've already voted or are certain to vote. Fetterman's down a point or so from that with people who haven't voted yet. So maybe the debate and criticism over Fetterman's debate performance, maybe it moved a little bit.
It may have, but as you noted, I mean, there's early voting that's been going on all over the place before debates not even happening in some of these races. So voters are at a bit of a disadvantage because our polling there in Pennsylvania also shows 51%, a majority of voters say that the debate performance with Fetterman and Oz actually factored into their vote. Will that be enough to help Oz, assuming that you feel like, okay, Fetterman, I think maybe doesn't get my vote because I don't think he's far enough along in his recovery? Or are there voters who say he lines up with where I am on my particular positions and I give him credit for showing up? In any case, majority of Pennsylvania voters tell us that debate actually mattered to them. So whether Oz can close this gap remains to be seen. That was a double-digit lead for Fetterman all summer long. And now, yeah, coming down to the wire.
Maybe that's a bit of an argument in favor of people who say, look, maybe some early voting is fine, but not, you know, weeks and weeks before voters have a chance to know all the facts.
Yeah. And that is definitely a conversation that's ongoing, is how far in advance do we start this? If we want to make sure that we have voting available for people who work different jobs or are on, you know, work weekends or work weeks, I mean, you got to make sure that there are equal and ample opportunities for people to have access. It's one of our greatest rights and treasures here in this country to be able to vote. But does that take 6-8 weeks? A lot of people would say no. And the question is too, some of these states start counting those ballots that come in ahead of time. I think we've talked about this. Some of them do not start counting those early ballots until the day of. So what happens is that night, whoever had the strongest vote tally during the day is going to be in the lead. Then there will be potentially, in some of these cases, hundreds of thousands of votes that still have to be counted. Pennsylvania Secretary of State already warning it's going to take days here. Don't expect anything that night. And, you know, that riles up people who feel like, okay, something's baked into that post-election day counting, but it's actually just the way that the Pennsylvania system is set up.
Shannon, Democrats have been warning that Social Security and Medicare are at risk if Republicans take over Congress. Any merit to it? Is it a scare tactic? I know that there has been talk on the Republican side of doing that. Republican leader in the House, Kevin McCarthy, was on Fox saying they want to save and strengthen Social Security. I don't know about any specifics, but Is that going to be a factor? The fear of maybe older voters saying, or people who want their Social Security someday concerned about it.
I do think that it resonates with voters, and you've heard it. It's been one of the talking points the last couple of weeks on the campaign trail and from the White House for sure. Now, what the Democrats will point to is a proposal that came out from Senator Rick Scott, which was immediately disavowed by Senator McConnell and the Republican leadership. This was his idea. This is not something we're supporting. We're not going to cut entitlements. On the House side, when you press them, it's a little bit more difficult to get details about what they mean. They say that, yes, there will be changes to the program because it will be insolvent if we don't make changes. But what are those changes? Does that mean cuts now? Does that mean any trimming of benefits now? It's hard to pin them down on that, but they say, absent some action by the House GOP and Senate, that those entitlement programs won't survive anyway. But yeah, I mean, that definitely gives the White House and Democrats the ability to point to it and say, your benefits may be in danger. And that definitely is something that connects with voters. And as we all know, the older voters tend to be the more engaged and the ones that actually show up on, you know, the election day or leading up to it.
Yeah. I mean, you can change the funding formula somehow, I suppose. You could incrementally up the age eligibility for collecting Social Security and Medicare. I mean, 65 isn't what it used to be. There are lots and lots of people who can start collecting and then live another few decades, unlike in the past where it was more, you know, generally at the end of your life where you'd get those benefits. Barack Obama's been back on the campaign trail. Doesn't seem to have lost much off his fastball. Seems like the same guy to me, pretty much.
He is fired up. He does. He seems like the guy who knew how to get out there and spin a story, spin a yarn, channel the emotions and the passion of the voters on his side. Now, is that just revving up the base? They already loved him and they already loved the message that they're getting. But can he get those younger voters out? Can he help bridge that enthusiasm gap that Democrats have in some of these key races? I mean, he definitely has a ton of passion and people listen and he gets the crowd going with him. So if that translates into getting people more fired up to turn out versus these people were going to vote with you anyway, but they were just going to stay home, it's a huge benefit to have him out there on these closing days.
I wonder if Barack Obama being back out there is in some ways a subconscious or not subconscious reminder of who Joe Biden used to be. He's obviously not the guy he was when he was vice president. And the comparison between Obama now and Biden now certainly isn't flattering. There's this George Will op-ed in The Washington Post, George Will, big, you know, for decades, a sort of conservative thought leader. And he's begging Biden and Vice President Harris to drop out and not run in 2024 and risk more Donald Trump. He says that Biden, frankly, is past the point, not just past his prime, but past the point of adequacy. And he says that Harris is unqualified.
Yeah, it's a pretty brutal piece assessing the current Biden-Harris team from George Will's perspective. And he sort of ends the piece talking about, you know what one party's probably going to give you, you know, the illusion there being Trump. So don't give us this rematch because it's just not going to be good for the country, he doesn't think, if it's a Biden-Trump rematch. And there's so much speculation about this, about whether former President Trump is going to announce his reelection in the next couple of weeks, depending on how well Republicans do on Tuesday night and when the dust settles from that. But yeah, I don't know. The country does not seem in polling very excited about a Biden-Trump rematch. But man, what a moment in history that would be if that's where we end up.
Look, if Democrats get their lunch eaten on Tuesday, you may hear Democrats who are talking privately or quietly about this Biden concern, and maybe the, you know, maybe that snowball gets rolling a little faster and gets a little bit bigger. Now, President Biden gave this speech about what he calls threats to democracy. Apparently something he felt he had to do after the attack on Paul Pelosi and all the election deniers potentially being elected to Congress. He gave a speech like this in September. He talked about a lot. He talked about this kind of stuff when he was running in 2020. I don't know that it moves a needle for any votes, but it's something he felt he had to do.
Well, I think for many reasons. I think, you know, to obviously decry what happened with Paul Pelosi, but I think he felt the need to do it because of the election. Also, I think this was kind of that rally the base, get folks out there. I was wondering as I watched the speech, who was the intended audience? Because I think a lot of the people who their top issue is worried, being worried about political threats and the January 6th, you know, fallout and the tragedy of that day. I think the people who that's first and foremost in their minds, they're already with President Biden. They're already going to vote with him. But when he talks about people he disagrees with being the ones who could end democracy in this country or put an end to this country, that's half the country that didn't necessarily vote for him, roughly. So I don't know if that message swings independents or brings over those extra folks.
Yeah. David Axelrod, Democratic strategist, he tweeted after the speech, essentially, look, it's a hugely important issue in the moment and appropriate for the president to address them. But as a matter of practical politics, he writes, I doubt many Democrats in marginal races are eager for him to be on TV tonight.
Yeah. And they've been very careful as to where they've deployed the president, knowing that there are, listen, troubles with his approval numbers and policies, and our polling all across the spectrum shows that people blame the White House and this president directly for how they're doing economically, and they feel like they're struggling. So, yeah, I don't know that that was their best closing message. There was nothing hopeful about it. There was nothing about how here's how we lead the country forward. It was more everything is over if you vote for Republicans, the end. And listen, I think that we know fear will drive people to polls. Negative advertisements drive people to polls. But at the end of the day, people have heard all of that. I think at this point, a closing argument maybe on how you're going to turn around the economy or the bright spots that we've seen to show that maybe your policies and your legislation are working seems like maybe that would have been a better use of the time.
Shannon Bream, host of Fox News Sunday. Always good to talk to you.
You too. Have a great week.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
This is Guy Benson with your Fox News commentary coming up.
During the primary season, we heard a lot about whom former President Trump supported, and on the Democrat side, who was highlighting more progressive causes. But then some candidates with more moderate politics won their primaries. Success as a moderate can depend on geography, how tight a district is. But some candidates say it's more than that. It's about looking at things based on issues.
Every single White House press conference since, I think, last November should have started about the economy.
Michigan Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin, who talked to this podcast last month, has long considered herself a moderate Democrat. The Republican former mayor of Cranston, Rhode Island, Alan Fung, may become the first Republican to represent the congressional district he's running in over 30 years.
I'm proud of that fact that whether it was my time as 12 years as mayor, you know, I had Democratic councils, Republican councils, but no matter what, I put the party labels aside, did the right things for our residents.
He told this podcast last month he absolutely accepts the moderate label, and that may be the ticket to winning in certain areas. In Ohio, a state that's been trending red, Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan likes reminding voters that he's happy to embrace policies from either side of the aisle as long as they put Ohio first.
We have a lot of Republican support of people who are coming over and helping us, two-time Trump voters, a lot of veterans, a lot of people that just, they like my message on taking on China, bringing back manufacturing, and I've got a record here of bringing those, you know, investments here.
Still, very few run outside of a party. We currently do have two independent senators, but they caucus with the Democrats. Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee told this podcast this week his opponent may say he's an independent, and Utah voters may like an independent-minded politician.
What they don't like, what they don't want, is someone who claims to be an independent, but is really a shadow Democrat, embraced by the Democratic Party, endorsed by the Democratic Party, funded by the Democratic Party. I don't regard him as an independent.
But Lee's challenger thinks Utah voters will regard him as such.
I swore an oath to the Constitution when I was a young CIA officer after 9/11. And I still am committed to that oath to defend and uphold the Constitution.
Evan McMullen is a former CIA officer who ran for president in 2016 against then President Trump as an independent.
My opponent, Senator Lee, took a similar oath, if not the same oath, when he became a senator. And I believe he's betrayed that oath. So when he tried to recruit alternative electors to overturn the will of the people in the last election cycle, it was a betrayal of the Constitution. And we simply cannot tolerate that. You know, I'm an independent conservative who believes that above all else, we must conserve our commitment to that founding document, to the Constitution. And that's one of our main differences, Senator Lee and me. The other thing I would say is that I am committed to working across party lines to solve problems. Now, Washington is broken. Our politics are broken. Senator Lee refuses to work across party lines to get things done. And we're suffering as a result. And I'm just not going to take the same approach.
You've said, though, that you were a conservative your whole life, but you are running with that I next to your name, the independent label. So then where do you feel your biggest, I guess, agreements are or disagreements are with the current Republican Party?
Well, I what I'm concerned about is just the rise of extremes on both ends of the political spectrum. And I think they've gained too much influence in both parties, frankly. Mm. And I think they're tearing our country apart. Most Americans, whether they're Republicans or Democrats or conservatives or liberals, you know, they have far more in common than they do in difference. And we're led to believe otherwise, of course, by leaders who try to divide us. But the reality is most of us are common sense people. We want to do things that will keep our country strong and maintain a strong economy, a strong national defense. You know, we want, you know, to have equal opportunity. Most Americans can agree to all of that. And yet we're told that the other side is the enemy. And so I've got differences on both sides of the political aisle. But I'll tell you what I'm most concerned with is ensuring that our system of self-government, our democratic republic, remains a healthy system in which people hold the power, not leaders, not special interest groups, not party bosses, but people. That's why I'm running as an independent. I'm also concerned with inflation and our spending, which is out of control. Both parties are responsible for overspending and adding to our $31+ trillion national debt. And we've got to have people who are going to work together to get our fiscal house in order. And also, I just think we've got to be more serious about protecting our air and water, because at least here in Utah, we're really suffering as a result of our failures to do that. And I take that very seriously.
Yeah, I think that water fight around the Colorado River and all the southwestern states is only just really beginning. You told our own Brett Baer on Special Report you wouldn't caucus with the Democrats. What have you heard from Utahns about this? Like, I imagine if they come up to you, if they bother to come up to you or engage with you, they're probably happy that you're running as an independent. But do you hear skepticism about sort of what your role could be or would be in the Senate without party to caucus?
Well, I'm running as an independent so that I can build a coalition of Republicans, Democrats, and independents to replace Mike Lee and stand up to our broken politics. And, you know, last time Senator Lee won re-election by over 40 points, and now many of the polls have us within the margin of error. And so it's a tight race because we've been able to build this coalition. And then the question is, yes, you know, how will you operate in the Senate? It's a Senate rule, Senate Rule 25, that all senators have committee assignments, and there has never been anyone elected to the Senate as an independent since at least World War II. Every independent elected to the chamber, even the true independents who don't caucus with either side, have received committee assignments. I know I will receive them, but the bigger issue is this. The Senate's very divided now. It will be very divided after this election. And the senators who are willing to act with greater independence and to stand up to party bosses on both sides have the most influence in the chamber. And I think they're the most influential people, frankly, in Washington, second to the president. I want that for Utah. We hear a lot about West Virginia and how, you know, what does West Virginia think? But I think Utah has an opportunity to help lead the country forward. And if we win, it'll make Utah, I think, one of the most influential states in the union.
Your opponent, though, says he's, and you know this, he's accused you of basically being a Democrat, saying you've received funding from Democrats, the state Democratic Party's thrown its support behind you. I imagine that it might be in part because they don't feel they have somebody else to throw their support behind necessarily. But
What do you say to those who do question, you know, where you're getting maybe some funding or where you're getting some support and how that paints you?
Yeah, well, I'm raising money from Republicans and Democrats and independents and libertarians, and I'm proud of that, frankly. I'm proud of the fact that we've been able to bring people together. Senator Lee says that all my money comes from Democrats and Democratic platforms. It's just not true. We do raise money on both Republicans and Democratic platforms because that's where our donors are. That's where our supporters make their donations. And I'm proud of the fact that we have the support of people from different parties. And where else in American politics are people coming together to keep America strong and to solve problems? And Senator Lee wants everyone to believe that I'm a Democrat because he knows that if I'm a Democrat, then he can win this race. But he's afraid of running against a true independent conservative who actually is committed to the Constitution. But he's just not. I've been a lifelong independent conservative, and I'm still that and will always be that. And Senator Lee is threatened by that and by our coalition of Republicans, Democrats, and independents.
I have a few more for you. Let's say you get to the Senate. We've heard Republicans talk about curbing spending and tying that curbing of spending to the debt limit, you know, in terms of maybe not raising the debt limit anymore. I know you've said, as you just did, you do blame Democrats and the Biden administration in part for spending contributing to inflation. So what do you do on that spending front? And what do you think of this talk of the debt limit?
Well, yeah, I think the Biden administration deserves a lot of blame for expanding the and growing the national debt and also inflation. I mean, the administration was warned by both Republican and Democratic economists not to move forward with the $1.9 trillion aid package during the pandemic. And they ignored the experts and they did it anyway. And as a result of that and other factors, we've got sky high inflation. But Republicans also sadly added to the national debt during the Trump presidency. And so this is really not a partisan issue. It's something that we all have to come together on as a country and respond to. And frankly, the only times in modern history when we have gotten our spending under control is when Republicans and Democrats have worked together. It hasn't happened any other way. I'm of the opinion that, you know, we should not default on our debt because I think it would cause even more economic instability and turmoil in our country. And so debating this at the time of managing the debt ceiling, I think, is not the right time. But I do think we have to get more serious. And I've articulated a plan and ways that we can get our spending under control. But the time to do it is not waiting until we have a debt ceiling limit. It's about making a serious effort to get our spending under control long before that point.
Many of us associate Utah with being a more religious state. And so I must ask, you know, we've heard you say that you're pro-life. What does that mean to you as far as abortion is concerned?
Yeah, I've always believed in the sanctity of life and consider myself pro-life. I am deeply concerned about this issue, and it continues to divide the nation. But one thing we agree on, even in our coalition of Republicans, Democrats, and independents on this issue, is that there is a more constructive way forward. Most Americans like me think the extremes on this issue on both sides have it wrong. You know, people who think there should be no limits on abortions, and then on the other side, people who think that there shouldn't be any exceptions. I just don't think that's right. You know, forcing a 10-year-old rape victim or any rape victim to carry a pregnancy to term isn't right. Allowing unlimited abortions on demand in the late trimester, you know, is wrong as well. But what we agree on is that if we make contraception more available and do more to support women, children, and families and impart the right values to our youth, that is what will lower the abortion rate in America. And thankfully, most of us, not the extremes maybe, but most of us can agree to that.
One more, if I may, you know, more of a philosophical question maybe, but, you know, most people fancy themselves or consider themselves independent. If you don't win, will you run for office again or will you try and start something new based on being an independent?
Well, I haven't had much of an opportunity to give what happens after this race. We've been very focused on it. I know you'd expect me to give that answer. You know, I don't know. But what I will say is that we have built something new and important here in Utah. We brought people together. We found common ground. We do it by focusing on our founding ideals that we're created free and equal, and our deepest purpose is the pursuit of happiness. And that's why we have a system of self-government in which our leaders are accountable to us, not the other way around. We've built this amazing coalition of Utahns from across the political spectrum by focusing on those founding ideals. I think that in order to strengthen America going forward, we're going to have to build this coalition all over the country. And so in one form or another, whether elected or not, I will be a part of that effort, because if we continue to be as divided as we are, we're going to come apart as a country. I think most of us feel that now. It's happening. So let's find a way to work together to solve problems and end this terrible period of such great political division and extremism.
Utah Independent Senate candidate Evan McMullen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary. Guy Benson.
What's on your mind?
As I've thought about the midterm elections this year, one of the big touchstones I've used is whether or not this cycle would more resemble 2018, but in reverse, where Republicans would gain the House but underperform in the Senate, or more like 2014, a big red wave that broke pretty late in October of that year. Over the summer, the 2018 thesis was looking pretty good, with Democrats holding their own in polling, especially on the Senate side, and Republican momentum interrupted. But down the final stretch of this campaign, where voters really tune in and undecided start to break, political gravity is taking hold, and 2022 is starting to look a lot more like 2014. Republicans should take nothing for granted, and the indicators could be wrong, but the race-by-race polling has shifted toward the Republicans. The national polling has clearly moved in the same direction. And the so-called fundamentals of this election have been bad all along for the Democrats. Historically, the party opposite the White House gains significant ground in the first midterm election of a new presidency. Couple that with an unpopular president, terrible right-track, wrong-track numbers, and widespread economic dissatisfaction. On paper, this was always going to be a Republican wave. The question has been, would it be a ripple or a tsunami? We'll know soon enough. And anything can happen, but as you examine the factors that matter most, it does appear as though that red wave has been building into something fierce, and voters will render their judgment very soon. I'm Guy Benson.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
This is Jimmy Fallon inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at FoxAcrossAmerica.com.